What I wanted to do today is to start by giving you an overview of retirement for the ages. I want to tell you about what it is and the journey that we have been on to this point, and tell you a little bit about the principles, and then tell you a little bit about the assessments that we've been doing and the process that we've been using in order to get the preliminary assessments that are in your brochures, which are preliminary in nature because we hope to learn a little bit more about some of these plans today, as well as we still have a little bit more, review to do before we can finally sign off and make them available on our website. The Retirement for the Ages grew out of Society of Actuaries Initiative Retirement 2020, which was launched in 2006. And this has been a very long journey for me because I was there at the beginning when we started Retirement 2020, and we started with two conferences that were mainly brainstorming, and we brought a lot of people together. And the idea behind this was the group that was responsible for sort of launching the initiative was concerned about the fact that there were, right now in the United States, there's primarily just defined benefit and defined contribution, and we could see weaknesses in both. And we wanted to see if there was another way of looking at it, another approach. So over the 4 years and three conferences, the final conference was presenting papers that the Society awarded, which actually sort of encapsulated what those principles are, was done in 2010. And so what we've done here with Retirement for the Ages is that the Academy, after getting all these great ideas from Retirement 2020, which I'll be talking about because they're actually underpin our principles here, the Practice Council decided to create the Forward Thinking Task Force, and they asked me to chair it. So we decided to lead the effort and look at the research that came out of Retirement 2020, look at the guiding principles, and identify which ones we thought were critical to maintaining a robust retirement system. Now, when we were initially talking about this, and we did have some conversation about universal coverage as well as adequacy, we decided that we were not going to address universal coverage. I mean, for an efficiency, the more people that are covered, the better. But we felt that that was a political decision as to whether or not universal coverage should be mandated or whether it should be a voluntary system that encouraged coverage. So we left that to the politicians. And then adequacy, when we started looking at it, we thought everybody has a different definition of what is adequate for their needs. And it was not something that we felt we had the expertise to define an overarching goal for adequacy, that we could actually define it. So what we ended up doing is we looked at these four principles, which luckily spelled ages. And the first principle is alignment. And this came out, I think, at the very first conference from Retirement 2020, which is that people were being asked to do things they didn't have the skills to do. Individuals are being asked to make investment choices and defined contribution plans, which they do not have the ability necessarily to do. Employers are being asked with defined benefit plans to maintain, to take the risk and the volatility, and it may just detract from their focus, which is their business at hand. So that was our first principle. Governance is the structure that supports the retirement system. How is it set up? And will you get good decisions and good actions from that governance structure? And efficiency, obviously, we would like retirement income maximized, and we would like risk to be controlled to the extent possible. We'd like to see that. And finally, to wrap it all up, sustainability, we would like to see how the costs are allocated among both the current and future participants in the systems, and whether or not the system can survive the shocks. So just to give you a little bit more detail about all of these, for alignment, we have three stakeholders, employers, who the individuals who are in the system working for the employers or retired, and society, which is the current and future taxpayers. And it's in their best interest to have their skills aligned with what they can do. So some of the possibilities when we're looking at different proposals or plans is, you know, what is the employer role? Is the employer being asked to do too much, or are we asking, you know, or has it been, does the system sort of modify the requirements for the employer? How are individual decisions organized? I mean, is there a way to make sure that the individuals are making decisions that are in their best interest, taking into account some of the behavioral finance about how individuals deal with retirement? And if we can do all this, we'll be able to protect society from suboptimal outcomes where people will have a better retirement and be able, and society will be better off because of that. With governance, we looked at governance, and this was a real struggle for us, trying to actually try to define what good governance was. I mean, we have plenty of examples of bad governance, but actually to hone in what you need in order to have it work, we found we had to work through a lot of things. But what we finally decided is that roles and responsibilities for the people involved in the governance structure had to be clearly defined, and they actually had to do what their roles, what their responsibilities were. Because if you just had the definitions and you didn't actually have a way to make sure they're actually carrying out their responsibilities, then you obviously don't have an adequate governance structure. We thought it was important to reduce real and potential conflicts of interest, that people had to know if there was a conflict of interest. And that it was going to be necessary for the governance structure to recognize and manage competing needs. So that's why we think it's important to have some stakeholder representation in the governance structure so that both of the needs of the different stakeholders could be recognized. And finally, it's very important that the staff involved in the governance structure have the expertise or have access to expertise in order to make sure that as they're administering and taking care of these plans and proposals that they're doing it properly. So E is for efficiency, which is dear to our heart. We'd like income to be maximized, but we want it to be at a sustainable level. And this means we'd like lower plan costs, we'd like participation broadened, we would like to minimize leakage that can happen when people change jobs. And of course, if risks are pooled, usually the system is cheaper. And if we can narrow that variability of outcomes for the individuals in the system, we feel that we would have achieved an efficient system. And if we can get the proper alignment, the proper governance structure, have an efficient system, then we are well on our way to having a sustainable system, which is our ultimate goal. And we think that the sustainable systems need to take into account the fact that somehow costs should be allocated equitably across generations, and that therefore that cost allocation needs to be proper and take into account that there is a risk involved and that it should be shared in a reasonable way among the different stakeholders in the system. And that system should be able to somehow absorb market shocks. They're inevitable, they will happen, and somehow the system should be able to respond to that without collapsing. And in any cases, sustainability does, and this is where adequacy comes in order for the system to be sustainable, it has to sort of balance between being sustainable and being adequate for the individuals in the system. So those are our four principles, and we'll be hearing more about these in greater detail this afternoon. And I thought I'd finish with just letting you know about this assessment that we've been doing. We have looked at many proposals. We're going to hear about four today. We've looked at several others that were in the process. And what we have done, what the task force has done, most of them are here, is that we you're assigned a proposal, you read the material, you record observations, the group gets together and discusses the observations and tries to make sure that, you know, they're impartial observations and that, you know, we try to indicate whether or not we're they meet the principle of the proposal, or it may fall short, or where we need more information in order to make a determination as to how it fits in with our principles. The information goes through two sets of review, and finally we make comparisons among the assessments because we try to make sure that if someone gets a plus for a certain feature and another proposal has the same feature, that it also gets a plus. And finally, when we get done, we'll be assigning grades for each principal and an overall grade. And these assessments will be available on our website. And we hope that it will inform the discussion and it will help people sort of look at plans and proposals as a way of saying, well, this makes sense, this will help. And so that was that's our goal. And with that, I think we can get started with our first panel on public plans. Thank you very much for coming.